I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. What a crowd we have in the studio. The winemaker is just, we hear, is just getting off the train, and he is on his way here. And so in our third segment, we're going to tell you about these very amazing wines from Puglia, Italy, that are available for sale in our region. These two delicious reds, perfect with grilled food. So we'll tell you about all that. And we have Todd Friedland, our special guest. Normally you hear him being the vet on our show, and he's here because he is a food lover and he is a great cook, and he is a hot pepper jelly maker at home. And so, Todd, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. We're going to get to your stuff in a minute. He has a way of gardening to grow hot peppers that is going to blow your mind. Honestly, it's absolutely startling, and there are no weeds. And no matter what he grows, there are no weeds, and I'll tell you about that in a second. Hey, you can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Of course, as always, my food buddies are here. Senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, who is among our go-to wine and cocktail guys in design, and oh, he's just a roundabout guy. That's just the way it is. Okay, and we're going to start with cocktails, as we always do, and this is from our regular contributor Anthony DeSerio, who's a Connecticut bartender. We both have been into this fresh fruit thing, and what can you do with these fresh fruits? And when he went into the market, the place was loaded still with clementines.
Oh, sure.
Now, if you can't find clementines, you can use regular oranges or really any fruit you want. So this cocktail called Oh My Darling features clementines and then gin. Gin has...
Me too.
Took a second. I was like, that's an odd name for... Oh!
Gin is a spirit that has lots of botanicals in it. He likes to use gin in this cocktail. So, and the recipe is at our website, foodschmooze.org. Your favorite gin, we give some suggestions on brands that we think are good quality. Clementine juice from a couple... clementines, some fresh lemon juice. Here's a secret thing, a pinch of salt, and then honey that you dissolve in hot water so that you've got honey water.
So it's like a little simple syrup with honey.
Yeah, and then you take a little zest off the clementine and a little zest off that lemon you were using, and you have a little bit of bottle of tonic water on the side. You make that honey syrup with hot water, and then you put some in the shaker that you're going to use to shake this up. It can be a jar with a lid or in a professional shaker. And by the way, you can use that leftover syrup to put in iced tea or iced coffee or in all kinds of things. And then into the shaker goes your honey and the citrus juices and the gin and that pinch of salt. You shake it well and then just strain it into an ice-filled, say, wine glass or highball glass.
Nice.
And then leave a little room at the top, and there's a splash of tonic. And then here's where that zest comes in. You've got that bright yellow and lime green from the lemon and the lime, and you just sprinkle it on the top of the drink. This is a delicious cocktail, and so easy. It is Oh My Darling from Anthony DeSerio on the
now
website.
The song's playing in your head.
Yeah, yep, got it.
Foodschmooze.org. Okay. Dr. Todd Friedland, as I mentioned, is a retired vet. He's on our show all the time. And I want to tell you, I remember, and Lori Mack too, I remember the first time Todd Friedland of Mansfield handed me a cracker. And this was years ago on the show, must be 20 years ago. And on that cracker, a smear of cream cheese, and on top of that, a dollop of his homemade peach hot pepper jelly. It was eye-rolling good, Todd. And he has kept me and our staff in his secret recipe hot pepper jelly ever since, because we won't let him on the air if he doesn't. So Todd is a home gardener, so we want to know about this technique he uses to grow all kinds of things. It is so fascinating. Anybody can do this. We're going to talk about this because it is gardening without weeds of any kind. You'll hear how in just a second. Now, you might not make your own hot pepper jelly as Todd does, although it's really fun to try. You can buy peppers in the market and give it a shot. But if not, when I run out of Todd stuff, you can buy hot pepper jelly all over the place now made with different kinds of fruits. Todd's, yours is phenomenal. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And he just made us a chicken, like a panko chicken dish.
Yum.
And it has, this is on the website too, and he uses this hot pepper jelly to make pan salsa. So maybe we'll brainstorm about that too. Let's start with that and then get into your no-weed gardening about how you grow
okay.
these hot peppers.
Okay.
So the hot pepper jelly that you make, we had, what was it?
I brought three varieties. One was made with my favorite pepper for hot pepper jelly, which is Hungarian carrot. This is a pepper that grows vertically downward, because some grow vertically upward, and they look just like carrots on a shrub.
Oh, that's funny.
That's what they look like.
Huh.
They, really? So they ripen into this orange color. But
spicy.
But they're spicy. They're not, well, everybody's got different things. But anyway, so that was, I brought that. I brought one made out of cayenne peppers, and then I brought one made out of Thai hot peppers mixed with peaches. Those were the three that we were eating.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we made the sauce out of last night was
the mild
a mixture of peppers that I had.
Okay. And so you can have your – if you make it yourself, you can have it be as hot as you want. And a lot of the commercial ones are not too hot. But if you do it yourself, you can have it be fiery hot. Todd has some of those. Or you can have it be mild. He has a range. You made a chicken dish. We posted your recipe on the website. So this is a crusted chicken breast. So tell us how you did it.
Well, I've made this with chicken, shrimp, pork, and duck breast. Not all together, obviously. But basically, as if you were making, say, chicken parmesan, you would egg wash and bread your chicken and then saute it in olive oil.
Good, a little salt
okay.
and pepper. There
so
you go.
So you just want to get it so the chicken is, or the pork or whatever, is just cooked, maybe a little undercooked. Your oven's at 200 degrees. You take everything out of the pan. It's important that you not use a nonstick pan. And then you put the chicken on a tray and throw it in the oven, keep it warm. Now you have all the bits in the pan.
The juices and the little crispy bits.
All the good stuff. I mean, put that in a glass and drink. I mean, just.
So, in fact,
we do.
Right. And I have some measurements on the website, but basically I pour white wine into the pan, deglaze the pan. That just means mix the bottom and all that stuff will come up
scrape
off the
it,
bottom.
Scrape
yep, scrape it. And then I add some chicken broth, some salt and pepper. And of an 8-ounce jelly jar, about, if I'm making it for four people, somewhere between a third of a jar of hot pepper jelly and a whole jar, depending on how
nice.
Hot I want this to do it. And then you melt that down until it starts to get a little bit syrupy. Throw in some butter. And then you continue to boil it down until it really becomes like a syrup. You can overdo this, so you want to keep watching it. Then right before I'm ready to serve it, butter. We add more butter.
Yeah, more butter.
Okay.
You don't have to, but
right.
you can.
Sure you do.
Okay. In the meantime, I've made pasta, and usually I serve it with broccoli. So yeah. I've got the pasta going. So pasta on a plate, broccoli on a plate. Then you reach in the oven, grab some chicken on a plate, and just cover it with this sauce. And there you go.
There you go. And so we had this sauce on the pasta.
Yeah.
You could put it on a baked potato. You could do it on your vegetables. All the kinds of slabs of protein that Todd described. It was terrific.
Yeah.
And you could really fool with that sauce.
Oh, you sure? You could do a lot with that sauce because, the main ingredient is the hot pepper jelly. You're not really tasting the white wine. You're not really tasting the chicken broth.
So here's a question for you. For people who have very low tolerance for heat, let's say you have hot pepper jelly. This has happened to all of us, right, Alex? Somebody's over and they can't tolerate. Could you add a little touch of cream?
No, let me tell you
what
I do.
To the pan sauce.
You could. But let me tell you what I did. When my son Russell was growing up, he didn't like the hot peppers when he was 4 years old. So I would just make a batch with peach jam, plain old peach jam. Then there's no heat. But all of the bits from the pan and it's...
With that sweetness.
So it's still just as good.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. Just
no heat.
Just no heat.
Sweet
thing. So you could add cream. I don't know why you couldn't. I never have. I think I substitute butter for the cream, don't I?
Yes. And don't forget to add that little bit of butter at the end.
At the very end, because it really
and
just
a little
gives
bit
a,
more butter.
It gives
if you
a
want.
Shine.
If
and,
you want.
Yeah, the glaze.
Right. Yep, the glaze. Yeah. And then your face turns red, and then you've had dinner. Right?
I think I'm still red and sweating, actually.
It was so good.
That's because we had a choice. I did not find, and I'm sensitive to too much heat, but I didn't find the... No. the sauce was too hot because you used the milder version of hot pepper jelly.
I used a version that everybody would eat because I wasn't sure about everybody's liking it.
So this is Dr. Todd's hot pepper jelly chicken. You can use the instructions for the pan sauce. It is at our website right now, foodschmooze.org, right along with Anthony DeSario's Oh My Darling Easy Cocktail. Foodschmooze.org.
Good combination. Have a cocktail and
I think
chicken.
It would. Yeah.
It would. Actually, you clementine, yeah. That citrusy thing with the lemon and the orange.
It'd be great.
Coming up, we have the winemaker from Puglia, Italy. He's arriving now at the train station, and they promise he will be here for our third segment, so we can't wait for that. He's bringing the wines. We're going to taste them. We have tasted them. I have tasted them, and they are absolutely sensational. So when we heard he was coming over from Italy, we said we have to have him on the show. So there's a couple reds. If you need to jump ahead, they're posted on our website right now, foodschmooze.org. A tip as we get to Todd, and he's going to explain this remarkable way of gardening that he has without weeds. And you can do this even if you have only a driveway. You don't even need soil.
Cool.
This is so cool. You just can't even believe it. Okay, here is a tip that we have for you. If you are trying to figure out how to store mushrooms, I love them. Shiitakes are my absolute favorite. I make them as often as I can. Pull the stems off, dice them up in olive oil in a cast iron skillet in the oven, in a 350 oven. With a lot of salt, I stir them, olive oil, until they start to get crispy. And then I just eat the pile of them or I stick them on things. So what happens is I get them in the vegetable bin and I forget about them.
Yeah.
And so then they quickly go to pieces, you know.
I'm great at buying stuff.
So Cooks Illustrated has a tip to keep loose mushrooms fresh for as long as possible. They heard from a woman in Pennsylvania who puts them in, you know, those plastic containers that strawberries come in.
Oh, sure.
She puts them in the empty plastic container that strawberries come in.
With the holes in the bottom.
It has a lot of vents and holes, and those vents keep the ethylene gas to disperse. It allows it to dissipate, and that's what destroys our mushrooms and things.
Cool.
So nice tip from Cooks Illustrated. Here's what's going to happen. Coming up, we've got this secret method of gardening. Even if you don't have any land, I'm telling you, in the driveway, on your sidewalk, you can do this. And no weeds. That's next. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. More mouth-watering conversation and fun here on The Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton, and it's great to have you listening to Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR. It's heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our regular contributor Alex Province, who lives in Hartford, and also Eugenia Matruda, Marion Roy. Our special guest is Todd Friedland of Mansfield, Connecticut. Our vet, usually, but this time he's here for his great food and gardening ability. Senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. And again, thanks for listening. Okay, Todd, I'm dying to hear how you do this gardening. And I know anybody can do this, right? Whether you have a driveway, a sidewalk patch.
It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter. I was having trouble growing my hot peppers. I was having some soil issues. And I started working with UConn and they said, it's going to take you 3 years to fix your soil. So I talked to some people and they said, well, why don't you grow your peppers in straw bales? So anyway, there's a book called Straw Bale Gardens. It's by Joel Karsten. And it's not a very big book, but it's a great book, and it illustrates a method. You buy bales of straw.
Where?
Any farm supply, sure. You know, any Agway or any place like
straw,
that.
Straw, not hay, though.
Not hay.
Straw.
Straw. Straw has no weeds. Straw is just the stems without the heads on them, so there's no weeds.
And you just get one if you want
to
do something
yeah,
small.
Yeah, last year I got about a dozen, but
well,
you could do whatever you want. Yeah, you can get one or two
big
or three.
Are they?
They are maybe 3 feet long and 18 inches wide and maybe 18 inches high.
And could I lift one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
As long as they're stored indoors so they dry.
Do you have them tied to the top of your car?
No, I have a truck. I have a truck. But you'll mess up your car, but so bring a garbage.
Okay,
it'll fit
so
in the
you
garbage
go to
bag.
An Agway-type farm-type
farm supply
hardware
and
supply.
Buy a bale of straw. You
and that's not hay. It is straw. That's the important thing.
It's very important. Hay will just give you weeds.
Okay.
So then you take the straw, you put it wherever you want. So it can be. So I'm pitching this now as for restaurants that are out there where chefs might have no land, but they have a little parking lot or a patio area, and they want to grow their own herbs.
You need sunlight.
You need sunlight. We're
but
gardening,
on your roof, you could do it.
You
on
can do
your
it
roof.
Anywhere. You can do this anywhere. So
such a great idea.
I don't know about
so it's just like flat roof in New York.
You can do it.
No one's going to want to live near me.
Yeah. So you set the bale
for
up.
For sale signs up.
Right, and then there's a 2 week conditioning.
Yeah, this is the part that interests me. What do you have to do?
Well, first you have to set the bale up correctly. Bales have a cut end, where the machine actually cuts the straw. So you have to have the cut end up. And that's easy enough to do. I mean, you'll see it when you have the bale. It's actually the strings become on the side. There's bales are tied with a string.
Okay, so
the string's on the side. The cut end is up, not the folded end.
Up toward the sun,
up towards the sun. And then you spend 2 weeks with, there's two different formulas. One is organic and one is non-organic. So you can use traditional fertilizers or you can use organic fertilizers. And over 2 weeks' time, you go through these steps where you add fertilizer to the top of the straw. And then you take your garden hose and you try to, with just the force of the hose, force it down into the
bale
as far as it'll go. It only goes a half an inch. And you follow the schedule. There's a couple days that you don't do anything, and there's a couple different fertilizers that you have to have.
In a progression.
I used Milorganite, and then I used one other thing that I have in the shed. I don't remember. But I did mine organically, and Milorganite is an organic fertilizer. And deer don't like it, so you can put it in your garden. It'll
this
keep
is heaven, yeah. Right? Wow. This is just I can actually. Okay. This may get me to actually garden successfully.
Yeah. So anyway,
can you grow flowers?
Well, yeah.
Herbs,
yeah.
Vegetables.
Yes. Only children don't go there.
Have you tried?
Yeah, not yet.
Can you do potatoes?
Absolutely.
Potatoes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah,
all right.
In the book. Okay.
So you
spend 2 weeks chomping at the bit, waiting for this to happen. And you water it every day, and it takes a lot of water. And you put your finger in this bale, and it gets hotter and hotter and hotter as the interior of the bale composts. And that is your season's worth of nutrition right there.
So you're not adding traditional compost or anything. Just these fertilizers
in
are
your
fertilizing.
Backyard, on your driveway. If you want it to be.
It's genius.
It is. So then what you do, and then you, in the book they tell you how to stake things up and all this. I kind of did it my own way. Yeah. Let's say for something that's a plant, like a tomato or an eggplant or a pepper plant.
Right.
You could take your finger, but I take my spade after the 2 weeks and I stab it into this bale, make a little motion back and forth, a little hole, take that little plant.
And because it's soft, it
goes right in there, yeah. And then you plant your plant. And then just with your hands, close around the little piece of soil that the plant comes in, and that plant is now planted.
Do you add more soil to
nothing,
it or anything?
Nothing.
It's genius.
So then maybe for tomatoes, 3 feet away, you do another one. So each bale will hold two tomato plants. Each bale for me held 3 pepper plants.
Well,
okay?
You can only grow on the top?
No, this gets
even better.
No, it gets better. If you, however, want to plant things like carrots, where they're seeds, where you
oh right? come on carrots
then, yeah. oh yeah then you just take sterile topsoil because you don't want any weed seeds and you spread a 2 inch along the top and now you have another garden. So this is another bale and then you have a garden, you put your carrot seeds there and now you have carrot seeds that grow. The carrots grow perfectly straight because there's no rocks or anything
to get in their way.
So they're perfect carrots. So yeah, beets, carrots, whatever you want to do, you do that. Now this is on the top of the bale. Okay, so what I did is on the sides of the bale, using my hand, I just created these little troughs, just these little areas, open areas, and I put parsley seeds and cilantro seeds and whatever else I grew, I don't remember. And you just mash it back into the bale. And in the front, the way my garden is set up is the front of the garden goes down a little bit of a hill, in the front of the bale, I put seeds for squashes. So they would grow towards the sun away from the bales. And then every empty space.
The vines just go down the hill.
And then every empty space I could find, I stuck flowers. So each bale was supporting three pepper plants, flowers, herbs, and squash.
Genius. This is, and why no weeds? Because
when you if you're buying clean straw, all that is the stems of whatever the straw was made out of, and there are, I mean, I know several people have done this, there are no weeds.
Now, what Chris and I were saying when we looked at this book, this is straw bale. Is, of course, raised up.
And it's a raised bed.
It's like a raised bed instead of spending. How much does it cost for a bale of straw?
Depending on where you buy it, $8 to $10 for a bale.
Genius.
Now, at the end of the season, you just throw it all away?
At the end of the season, you dig out the strings, throw them away. They're a loop. And then I threw the rotten straw in my compost pile. Yeah. Now it's all compost.
What strings?
Well, the bale is held together by strings.
Yeah. I see.
The baling machine. Yeah. I worked on farms to get into veterinary school.
And that lasts the entire season? The string doesn't just decay?
No, the strings stay. Now they use a nylon string. Yeah. It's really terrible. But anyway, no, the string is there.
It's thankful.
So I just pull it out. You know, you find it, you cut it, you pull it out. I save those strings because I tie other things up.
Oh, that's
tomato
cool.
Plants.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And then, tomatoes or peppers. I put tomato cages, you know, those round cone cages.
Yeah.
That's what I used to stake everything.
It's because they sort of fit right onto the top.
Well, I do them upside down so that the four little prongs go into the bale, and then they just grew into the thing. So there was no falling over. There was nothing. One bale sagged a little, so there's a picture in here of what you do. You take a board, you put it up against the bale, you put a couple things in the ground, and it holds it back up.
There's a picture in this book. Isn't this unbelievable? There's a picture in this book of some people who are obviously in a kind of urban area sort of semi-urban suburban area, and they have a very small front yard and obviously no sun anywhere else. And so they have, six or nine bales that go in rows across the front yard.
It looks awesome.
And giant things are growing out of the top.
I thought I saw trees.
I thought they were trees.
You can be as creative as you want, but I'm not going to do this. I want Chris to look at this and describe this to the listeners. This
is like a baseball movie.
No, just describe that picture.
All right. This is one bale ahead. This one bale of straw. And in this bale of straw, they did cabbage heads. And there's got to be a dozen cabbage heads nicely tight packed into the top of this bale of straw.
So and they're beautiful.
If you have something that grows typically underground in the soil.
Okay, so potatoes.
Say potatoes. Yeah. Okay. How do you know when they're ready?
Potatoes are ready when the vines, that's what they call them, when the vines start to turn brown and kind of wilt over. That's when potatoes are ready to harvest.
Same thing if they were in the
ground. Same thing as if they were in the ground.
Plant dies.
So the plant dies.
If people are nervous about what's in the soil where you live, you could do this. If you live in the city
and
can find a little sunny square somewhere, or there's a little roof area and nobody minds, you could do this.
Great.
I bet if you had, if you had a sun porch, you could bring a bale in, and it would be like a little greenhouse.
Yeah, I might frame it out then because it might get a little messy, as the season goes on.
That's what I'm thinking.
You can wrap
a question about maintenance. So how much maintenance? Is it a lot of watering? There's no weeding, right?
Oh, right.
So what do you have to do? Just water?
It must take a lot
of
water.
And it's suggested in the book, is it does take water because first of all, there's tremendous amount of growth going on, so the plants need the water. I'll just tell a short story. In the heat. But the maintenance, I put a soaker hose down the middle of mine. So I hooked up my little hose. I have hoses going everywhere.
You mean just lying across the top?
Going the length of my row.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I put a soaker hose. And
on
then
the
I,
tops of
on
the
On the
bales?
Top. And then I could just, with my little gadgets that turn
to water,
on and off, all the little things that you buy for hose connections, I could water each row individually or three or four rows at a time.
By just turning one on.
By just turning one hose on, I could water them. So they do take water. But I also use broadcast sprinklers for my garden, and they would get water that way as well.
That's it. There's
nothing
else.
Every once in a while, one of the cages would kind of sag over as at the end of the season because the compost is getting so soft, or the bale is. So you just take a regular 1 by 1 inch wooden tomato stake and drive it in and prop it up. There is no maintenance, except you have to pick the flowers and pick the herbs and
eat the food.
And how do you get it out of there once it's falling apart like that? Do you
the plant, you mean?
The bale.
Oh, it's by the time the season's over. and you yank out your plants. It just kind of collapses to the ground, and I have a fork, a pitchfork sort of thing, and I just put it in my wheelbarrow and throw it in my compost
pile. Right into the compost.
Yep.
Now, if you have that on a yard, does it kill your grass?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would kill the grass because no sun would get underneath it.
And then plant a little more grass seed if you don't want to repeat.
Yeah. I'll bet that grass would grow higher than all the other grass.
That's the next year.
You know, if you're lucky enough to have your driveway in the sun, just move it up to the top of the driveway.
Yeah, I mean, no, it can be.
How fantastic.
It really can be done
is.
Anywhere. And it's, as I said, there's no weeds.
So at the end of our street in that park, we have a volleyball court that's no longer even anymore. And we don't have the money to remove it. But this would be a great idea to use an empty volleyball court into a community garden.
And you wouldn't even have to take up the...
Just keep it. Keep the old asphalt that's there.
Sure. Yeah.
And in the book, they describe, just get creative with your designs because it doesn't... You don't have to do it in rows.
In a pattern.
Like a pattern, almost like a maze garden.
We are talking about straw bale gardening. If you're just joining us, Todd Friedland is here. He is. You usually hear him as the vet on our show from Windham County. He is from Mansfield, Connecticut, and he's on the Food Schmooze this time because he makes killer hot pepper jelly. His recipe for how to use either store-bought or homemade hot pepper jelly to make sauces is up right now. We've got the name of the book up there that he's talking about because he does this straw bale gardening. Notice that we didn't say hay. We said straw, like straw man. Think of it that way. You get it at an Agway type, farm supply store, and it's around $10 or so.
Yeah, where I live, the old signs on the road say straw, and it's $3 a bale.
Well, is there any kind you should watch out for that's been rinsed with anything weird or has poisons in it? Or
I guess you're trusting the farmer, but if you're buying from a Agway or someplace, then you're not going to know anyway. But I mean, I've not.
It's
had
usually
any
used for bedding and stalls. Yeah, I lived on a horse farm.
It's pretty clean stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty clean stuff.
Yeah, I think if a horse or something got into it, there'd be a lot of lawsuits if it wasn't clean, right?
Yeah, I mean, horses don't eat straw, but if it was something,
I just want to say this is probably one of the best ideas I've ever heard for gardening.
It really is.
It really is. If you see the pictures,
there are no weeds,
and it's easy. And
so you just have to pay for the fertilizer, which is, and when it's organic, that's some cost.
Yeah, there is cost, but I have to tell you, even with my traditional gardening, I would never want to price out what one tomato cost me to grow.
Oh, yeah. I had the most expensive lettuce ever.
Or
it was the cost of cashmere.
Or the work. I tried to garden a couple times, and because I'm on a farm, the work. Forget about the price. The work that goes into a regular garden, weeding and pruning. Oh,
and imagine doing a raised bed. You have to buy all the lumber, build it
digging,
up,
and
stuff leaches out of the wood.
And then the reason he did this, the soil might not be right, and it can take years. He's right. It can take years to get your soil to the right condition to grow
vegetables. But you have to water every day.
Well, every couple of days. It depends on the weather. You have to keep this thing moist. But your plants will tell you.
They'll look a little wilty.
When they are growing, I grew the hot peppers in the straw. I grew my sweet peppers next to them in my soil, which is now corrected. And although everything did really well, the things that were growing in the straw, they just glistened. They just gleamed at you and said, thank you. And so, and when that goes away, you need to water. But you have to pay attention to the water.
Is the flavor of the vegetables any different?
I would think the healthier plant produces the better tasting vegetables.
There's no question.
And let your peppers turn color.
But
don't
what
eat
about
them green.
The minerals and vitamins that we get from the soil?
All I can say to you is look at the book.
Nice looking tomato.
The stuff and the flowers and the herbs and the squash that I grew were amazing.
And I have an idea for you. Yeah. There is a way that some gardeners that I've read about years ago would get extra minerals into plants and into the food growing from those plants by putting stone dust, stone powder. Yeah. So you go to one of these stone supply places and say, I want some, just look up online which ones are good. The average stone powder, and you just would mix that into your bale when you're...
I imagine it's the fertilizer that gives it...
No, but I'm with Faith because potatoes, they suck up the minerals.
Yes, they
That's
do.
What makes them
That's
so
right.
good.
Yep.
Oh,
I don't know. I mean,
I just go
like this, and I follow the book, and I have to tell you this, and then people would come over and say, oh, can I have a couple of hot peppers? And I would say, no. I would say, come on out to the garden. I'd get my lopper, and I would say, you can't take a couple of peppers. Here's a branch. Because the plant was so prolific that I needed to get rid of these peppers. Yeah, I couldn't do anything with them. I made a hundred.
You could even take this bale and put it in the back of your car once the thing is growing. If you're going on vacation, take drive it, with it over
you.
To and, your
or take it with you. Take it with you on vacation. Your tomatoes are right
there.
You could
put it in a wagon, a little red wagon.
Take it to your friend's house.
No, you could put it in a wagon. You could do the whole thing.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
travel it. Put some holes in the bottom of the wagon and let the
and
water
drive it
out.
Around.
That's right.
You could take it
a
around.
A garden on wheels. Yeah, you could actually follow the sun around.
Except for the squash. You'd be dragging all over the
ground. Great idea, Alex. In wagons.
You know, but with the nutrients, you've got organic material, right?
Breaking
the,
down.
It right. is organic material, so why would you think there were no nutrients in there?
Yeah, I didn't do any.
Minerals. Minerals.
And minerals,
all
too.
All right. Todd, so Todd's recipe for his hot pepper jelly chicken is there. We cannot thank you enough. Stick around, okay?
Yeah, we'll
we're going to have the wine tasting
That's
next.
Why I'm staying.
Incredible value wines. Castello Monaci coming on the show right now. Thank you
oh,
for
welcome.
This instruction on how to do this. I swear to you, this is how I'm going to do my Sun Gold tomatoes this year. I'm going to start this right now, and I cannot wait. And my basil and everything else. I'm very excited about this. Okay, please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, cocktails we feature right now or anytime. Thousands of you, we thank you. Thousands of people are now going to us at this site, and we're having conversations with you, and it is fantastic. Foodschmooze.org. S-C-H like school, M-O-O like the cow, Z. Foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade with shafafa on the side.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We have a major announcement. The Food Schmooze Martini Competition is June 25th. At Riverview in Simsbury, Connecticut. And if you are a competitor, a professional bartender, and would like to compete, I hope you will, because our announcement is this. We have officially filed an application with the Guinness World Records. This is not a joke. This is
very
for real.
Exciting.
Wow.
To be the largest martini competition in the world and to earn that title. And so we are hoping and expect to every year. The attendance has gone up. We were at about 850
Crazy.
Last time. And
unbelievable.
So, and we want to say thank you already. It's at our website right now, but tickets are $60 each. And we thank you because we've been getting early indications that corporations and businesses are buying tickets in blocks as thank you gifts to their special clients or to employees.
Wow.
Incredible. Never dawned on me that this was possible. So, and there are so many martini stations. And by the way, you vote at this competition. You're given a ballot and you pick the
That's
king
it.
Or the queen. So we cannot wait to see you there. We will all be there on June 25th, a Thursday, at Riverview in Simsbury, Connecticut, the Food Schmooze Martini Competition. It is wall-to-wall people. Bring your dancing
Fun.
Shoes. So many martini stations, so many food stations for you to eat and drink and have a lovely time. Lots of people chip in and get limos so that they're driven to and from the event. It is fantastic. Okay, now I've been waiting for this. I promised you we would tell you about two wonderful wines. And these are reds perfect for spring and summer grilling of meats and duck and chicken and pork, a wine with pizza, and again in our affordable category of $15. And this is from Castello Monaci. And one of the reasons we are so excited is that we have Mark Raymond here. He's always on the show from Frederick Wildman and Sons, the distributor. Hey, Mark.
Hey there.
Mark has turned me on to so many wines and is such a great taster and a person who knows how to match food and wine together. He's just incredible. And he and his company are the distributors of this wine, bringing it in from Puglia, Italy, and it's called Castello Monaci is the vineyard. And we have a family member here, Luigi Saracca.
Saracca, good morning.
Good morning.
Saracca.
Saracca. Okay, and thank you so much for making the trip.
Thank you very much.
Very nice of you. Would you describe what the vineyard is like in Puglia?
Puglia is the last region in Italy, the deepest region in Italy. We are in south of Italy. And Puglia can be divided in two parts. The upper part, that is like Foggia, Bari, and Salento. That is the part between the two seas. So between the Adriatic and the Ionian Sea. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of peninsula. And we have a lot of influence, wind influence. We have the most amount of sun hours during the day, more than Sicily. So we have a lot of sun and very, very warm temperature during summer, but a beautiful wind, constant, that protect us against a lot of maladies like botrytis. So we are the land that can be organic more than the other. To me.
How fantastic. We are seeing so many vineyards, especially as they get very big, fooling around with the wine, adding things they shouldn't be adding, and this is not good for our health. To what degree do you manipulate the wine?
I speak about my reality. We try to be as artisanal as possible. We don't buy any grapes at first. We have 210 hectares of vineyard, and we just use our grapes, the grape produced by my father, because my father is the man, actually. I'm just an assistant to him. Yeah. And we try to vinify at the best the quality that he can give to us, actually. Yeah. So we try to not manipulate in any case. We try to be traditional. Overall, with varietal, like we use just our typical varietal, Primitivo, Negroamaro, and Malvasia Rai Lecce. But we try to be even innovative, using the lowest temperature fermentation, using some particular oak, French oak, to give a different result.
Do you toast the barrels?
Yes.
Oh, beautiful. That adds yet another element of the recipe when you're making wine. So we have here, and these are all posted on the website. Imagine this, $15 for something like this. This is one of the times when the dollar is working in our favor in America.
Finally.
He's not smiling. Yeah.
No, he's happy.
Yeah. Mark is smiling. He's not smiling.
I mean, this is a very good value. So so let's, yes, thank you. That's very good. So we're trying now from Castello Monaci, the Lianti, L-I-A-N-T-E. It's at our website. This is the year 2013. Around $15 a bottle is how this should be priced. This is a blend of, what are the three grapes again?
It's actually two grapes.
The grapes are Negro Amaro and Malvasia Nera di Lecce, the traditional composition of Salice Salentino DOC. Salice Salentino is a little town. It's a petit village where the winery is located. The original composition of the traditional composition of Salice Salentino is Negro Amaro, 80%, and 20% of Malvasia Nera di Lecce.
Oh, this is good.
Oh,
it's
my God.
I want
delicious?
This. Yeah, I want delicious. This with Mark Brick Oven Pizza.
This is my Brick Oven Pizza wine.
Oh, my goodness. This is so...
You think of those crisp, natural, vegetables with a little fresh tomato and some fresh herbs.
Yeah. Alex, what would you have it with?
Oh, my gosh. Anything.
I know. I would. I would really just say...
Or without anything.
Here's my...
By itself.
Yeah, this is great.
Very,
very
good.
You could just drink this by itself.
You know,
absolutely.
This tastes like real wine.
Real,
this is real wine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Price.
This is not fooled with. This is really, and the price is unbeatable for this quality
it really
wine.
Is.
Let's take advantage of that dollar.
Right? Yeah, because this really. So if it is not in your wine store, call ahead so you don't make an extra trip. And call ahead and say, do you have it on the shelf, the Lianti, L-I-A-N-T-E. It's on our website, foodschmooze.org. And if they don't, just say, would you get it for me? And say this. The distributor is Frederick Wildman & Sons, and they will have it to you within 24 hours. And that's what we like to do.
And tell them it's delicious.
Yeah.
Because it really is. Right? That's, I mean, for a word, right?
I can't even talk. I just want to sip this.
Yeah, this is a delicious wine.
It tastes like real wine.
You don't usually come around to wines like this at that price.
No.
No, yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, I want some of this.
So good.
Mark, put a case in for me.
I'll tell you what.
You got it.
I know this is, you might say, a bit sturdy for what I'm about to say, but when I have swordfish on the grill, yeah, and it has that little bit of, sometimes I will put, you will probably yell at me, Luigi, but sometimes I put a little mayo on it before I put it, mayonnaise on it before I put it on the grill, and it gets a bit of a char on the outside because of the oil and the egg. And so that char would be, even though it's a fish, I think with a grilled swordfish, this would be absolutely delicious. Yeah. As you say, well, Alex, anything.
Yeah. I agree.
It would be great with duck. I'd put a little spin on that swordfish, and I'd put a little puttanesca sauce over the top of it after you grilled it.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Just
that's
to give
a
it
great
that
idea.
Southern Italian
that
flair.
Little bang. Yeah. That's right. Yes. That's my favorite pasta sauce, by the way.
So that's
okay.
A winner. That's
that
a
is a winner. Okay, on the website right now, foodschmooze.org, highly recommended. And we know these people run to get these, and so I would encourage you to do that since we like this an awful lot. So let's go on to the next one, because we have two in the same price category, again from your family, Luigi.
Yes.
This is called Piluna.
Piluna. That is the name of the pot of clay where in the past was stored the wine and the olive oil. So it's like a receipt. It's like
an amphora.
An amphora.
That would collect their wine, or sometimes they would have them out, I believe, out in the vineyard sites that they would collect water. Big, large amphoras.
And I hear there are wine fountains in Italy in places where there's just wine coming out of the fountain. And you can
just
hold your glass.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a miracle. One of the wonders of the world.
That's right.
This is from, again, the vineyard Castello Monaci, Monaci. And this is called Piluna. It's the year 2012, of course, posted on our website. We tell you exactly what you need to say at your wine store. Again, coming in at about $15, which is an amazing price point. Okay, can we just pour a little bit of this? Luigi, can you please, Saracca, can you please tell me about the grapes in this wine?
It's very interesting. The grapes here, this wine is 100% Primitivo. Primitivo has the same DNA of Zinfandel. So it's the Italian Zinfandel Primitivo. Primitivo is a very authentic varietal from Puglia. We have different clones of Primitivo. And this is a Primitivo del Salento. Another more common is Primitivo di Manduria, that is a DOC. Here we are with an IGT. IGT Primitivo del Salento. The name Primitivo comes from the word primo nativo. So first born, first ready
yes.
to...
The first ready, native.
Yes, first native. Yeah. So it's the first red varietal in Puglia to be harvested.
Mm. Ah.
This is the sense of the name. Yeah. Just to have an idea, 2012 was harvested August 25. So very early.
Wow.
Earlier than Fiano. There's a white varietal.
Yes, it's delicious. So how would we describe this Piluna? I'm about to take a taste. So Mark, you're ahead of me. Go ahead.
So Primitivo to me is a little bolder in style. It's got much darker, richer fruit characteristics to them. You know, the dark berries, the dark plum. Mm,
kind of silky, though.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely got a lot of elegance on it. And then it finishes with just a touch of anise on the finish, which I love.
But I get a hint of berry in there,
too. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
cherry. And it's very fruity.
Much bigger
than
the Salice. This is a bolder style, right?
Yeah.
In America, as you know, you've visited so many times because of the vineyard, but I find in doing what I do that if I often say that fruit forward, just as you said, very fruity, Sometimes people will misunderstand and they think you mean sweet.
Yes.
Right.
And I always take care to explain to them that really what we mean is that in a back note, in a back region of your taste buds, you can detect that there is actual fruit in this wine.
Yeah.
And it's so that it's kind of an echo of the fruit in something, you know, that this is grape juice and it's beautiful.
Right.
This is very, very nice. Now let's talk about what food we would have this with. Primitivo. I'd have it all with the same thing. I'd have a steak.
I say lamb.
Oh,
yeah.
Lamb.
Yeah, lamb is definitely.
You know, duck. I think it can work
with duck.
Absolutely.
How about a juicy hamburger?
Oh, yeah.
Grill.
And if I had a grilled chicken with a sauce, you know, I would
do a
kind of hearty garlic lemon sort of compote on my chicken would be absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely.
But like you say, Alex, just sitting around is also fine with me with this wine. This is real wine.
Barbecued ribs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any type of barbecue sauce would go with this pretty well.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's no sugar. It's so fruity, but
beautiful.
no sugar.
I love that.
Yeah. Bone dry.
So it's Piluna.
Piluna.
And it kind of just overtakes your mouth.
I want to speak
Italian
so much. It is the most gorgeous language. Piluna. Okay, 2012. And
by the end of these bottles, we will be.
So this one, hearty and bold, yet it's silky and smooth. We've got this little hint of red berry in there. And in the end, you think, ooh, what is this interesting little thing on my palate that I can feel in my tongue as you're swallowing? And it's that echo of anise. Beautiful, beautiful thing. So if you go to our website, foodschmooze.org, you will see this. And we tell you what to say at your wine store. And thank you so much for finding these for us, Mark.
I was telling Mark what
we were after, and Mark said, I have just the two perfect things, and I can arrange that the winemaker comes from Italy to your studio. Luigi, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask a quick question before we go? We have a couple of minutes left before the show ends. In your region, if you are drinking a wine on a weeknight, of course you have your family wine, but what do most people drink? Do they drink, in terms of grapes, do they drink these grapes that we're talking about,
yes.
Primitivo?
Yes. In every region in Italy, we are focused on our typicity, you know? And in my part of Puglia, we are more focused on rosé, actually. So we have a beautiful Negro Amaro rosé, because Negro Amaro is the perfect acidity to have a great rosé.
Is that coming in?
Oh, when is that? Are you? Do you make that?
Mm-hmm. I make 100% rosé. 100%
Negro
Amaro.
Did you bring it? It's pretty fantastic.
Does Frederick Wellman carry this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, please. Oh, you must. You must fly back immediately.
Yeah.
And
for sure, it's a pleasure.
In the meantime, we will have Mark bring that to us.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God, that sounds incredible. We love rosés on the show. That goes with so many things. And to hear that it's 100%, wow, interesting. Well, the weather is gorgeous where you are.
Yeah.
I'm happy
sometimes
for you.
Sometimes it's too hot.
No such thing.
We have been through a very bad winter, and so we don't know those words.
Bring it on, please.
I want to suffer hot. Like they suffer there.
We must remember never to complain about this. But your lemons are growing already?
Yes.
Yes, dripping from the trees. and figs coming from the trees.
Orange and
olives, right? Yes.
Yeah, olives.
Oh, and all that seafood coming to you from both sides, right?
We have a lot of seafood.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So sometimes we take the show on the road. Can we come to your vineyard?
Caspita, of course. You are more than invited.
Next week, too early?
Yes.
Tomorrow is too early?
I'm sure everybody's going to try and get their hands on this guy. All right, thank you. Thank you, Mark Raymond. And thank you, Luigi Saracca. And it is the vineyard Castello Monaci. Mm-hmm. And go to our website, foodschmooze.org, to see the names, the years, everything you need to order at your wine store. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9. Thanks again to Todd Friedland, Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Everybody eat.
when they come to mind.